The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Money FM 89.3, best of workday afternoon.
Welcome into the Health Suites on Money FM 89.3. I'm Melissa Hyag. Joining me today to discuss living donor liver transplants is Associate Professor Sridhar Iyer, Surgical Director and Senior Consultant for the Adult Liver Transplantation Program at the National University Centre for Organ Transplantation. Hello, Prof. Welcome
Hello.
To the show, Prof.
Hello.
Okay. I understand that there's a new study done by your team at the National University Centre that has found assuring outcomes for living donors or people thinking about, you know, maybe becoming a living donor. We'll talk more about that in a bit. But first, I thought to get everyone on the same page on what the surgery is like for living donors.
Hepatectomy is a surgical removal of a part of liver. Hepatic meaning pertaining to the liver. Living donor hepatectomy is a procedure in which a part of the liver is removed surgically to transplant into a recipient with liver disease. So the liver has two lobes or sides. For living donor liver transplant, the donor donates either the right side of the liver or the left side of the liver or a small portion of the left lobe called left lateral segment. The right lobe is bigger and is about 65 to 70% of the total liver volume. So when an adult donates to a child, we usually remove a smaller portion, which is about 20% of the total liver volume. When we do adult-to-adult liver transplant, we take up to 70% of the liver from the donor and transplant to the recipient. It is a complex surgery, both for the donor and the recipient, and is technically demanding. The higher the complexity, the greater the risk of complications, but donor safety is of utmost importance. And one of the most important ethical dilemmas is balancing the benefit to the recipient with the donor risk. The donor is a healthy individual and is exposed to the risk of surgery with no direct benefit.
Did you say there's no direct benefit for the donor?
Apart from the psychological benefit of being a donor and helping somebody.
Right, but what about the downside for the donor?
Yes, the donor definitely faces some risks of donation. There are risks of complications. There is a risk to life. We do quote that there is about 0.5% risk to life and up to 20% risk of complications. Of course, what we need to quote is what we see across the globe and not just what we see in one center or in Singapore.
But the risks that a living donor would face, are these long-lasting or are they just, are they temporary, you know, during a certain phase, right, after the initial, I don't know, months after donation? Yeah. And would the liver regenerate itself to become, I don't know, 100% of what it was before donation?
Yes. So the liver has a unique ability to regenerate, and that's why somebody can donate a part of the liver. But one of the myths is that liver regenerates, it doesn't regenerate to a same shape. If somebody donates the right lobe of the liver, the right lobe is gone. It's the left side which assumes a volume which is what the donor needs and to regenerate, so volume that is equivalent rather than the right side growing back. We have to assume the liver to be in two parts, and if you take one part out, that doesn't come back, but the other side grows bigger.
Okay. I understand that a common practice actually across the world is to rely on livers from deceased donors. The Human Organ Transplant Act in Singapore was introduced in 1987, and that has an auto opt-in mechanism for Singaporean adults, meaning when they turn 21, if they don't want to, you know, automatically be included to donate their organs, then they opt out. But are a lot of people doing that? Is that why we're still facing a low donation drive, donation rate?
Singapore has an opt-out system for organ donation. That is, organs can be removed for transplant after death unless the person has registered as an objector when alive. It applies to all Singaporeans in PR 21 years of age and above with sound mental capacity. Mm. The legislature on presumed consent was introduced way back in 87 with some modifications along the way, and it includes kidneys, liver, cornea, and heart that can be procured from deceased donors. Compared to Western nations, where the donation rate can range from about 6 to 46 per million population, with an average about 12 to 14 per million population, Singapore, the deceased donation rates remain low at 7 to 9 per million population per year. And this is despite a low opt-out rate of between 2 to 3%. It's probably multifactorial. One of the most important important thing is about public awareness. There are times when families object to donation, when the topic of organ donation is raised in ICU. It is also with not knowing what the intended donor wanted. So there is a surrogate decision making happening. In a recent study involving public survey in Singapore, 85% of people who were asked this question were willing to donate after death. But when they were given a realistic scenario, only about 65% were willing to assent to donation of their loved one's organs. So knowledge of various aspects of disease donation, including quota, can be optimized for. Surveys among professionals also suggest unease about enforcing the quota in a hard way. Mm. About 90% intensivists feel that there are cultural, societal and religious barriers to acceptance of organ donations in Singapore, with the concept of body preservation after death being important. Mm. So given this perception, a lot of people do feel unease at enforcing it right. in a hard way.
Okay. Okay, to understand the process a bit better, even if a person has not opted out, if you were still living on perhaps on your deathbed and you're asked, right, or you're asked again, or are the relatives or family members the ones who are standing in the way as well?
Yes, that is because the person who is a potential organ donor is no more. I mean, they are brain dead or pending brain death evaluation. So it is the next of kin who have a difficult time. Already they are losing a loved one, but they are also now facing a scenario where they have to decide whether to attend for the donation or not.
Yeah, and the authorities, in such a delicate situation, do not make a hard enforcement of the law. You can't do that.
It is difficult.
Okay. Well, some of the cultural beliefs, I suppose in a way we can't be helped. There are some who believe that you have to be, I think in ancient China, for example, they always believe that the body has to be buried whole, right? But there are some who have perhaps medical issues that are standing in the way of them, becoming whether a deceased donor or living donor. It's the living donor that we want to talk about right now. So tell us more about this study that you've done and what your findings are.
So in Singapore, about 50% of transplants are from living donors. Majority of living donor hepatectomies worldwide with excellent outcomes are limited to high-volume centers. It is with a Singapore population of about 5.6 million, it is very difficult to imagine that we'll have a center which does more than 100 transplants a year. But given the complexity of living donor hepatectomy, it is expected that the volume-outcome relationship will favor those high-volume centers. But we will still continue to function, and because of geographic constraint, population density, a lot of studies looking at volume outcome relationship. It is fraught with biases in selection of patients, high risk patients, small sample sizes, and all. Mm. But we focus to look at donor outcomes because the donor selection process is generally standardized across most places in the world. Donor hepatectomy is a fairly complex procedure, and it requires a multidisciplinary input, at least prior to the surgery. Mm. And there is a very low tolerance to donor complications. So it is very difficult to study interventions in a traditionally established scientific technique such as randomized controlled trials, PDSA cycles. So what we looked at is the outcomes of donor hepatectomies from 1996 onwards since we started the program till December 2019, so that we have at least a year. A total of 204 donors were reviewed and analyzed, and they were divided into two time periods with 102 donors in each arm. The first phase was actually almost 18 years. The second 102 donors happened in the last 5 years. Some of the key findings was that about 52% were males, which is almost an equal distribution of the gender. The ethnic distribution follows the ethnic distribution in the population. The mean BMI of the donors was about 24. The mean age is about 35 years of age. The mean age actually increased from about 34 to 37 years in the two eras. And what we found is we were increasingly doing more and more right lobe and adult to adult transplant. In the first era, it was about more than 70% were adult to children. But in the second era, majority of the transplants were from adult to adult. But despite doing a more complex operation, the outcomes were quite good. The operating time actually reduced by an hour. The operative blood loss improved from about 550 mils to about 350 mils. The hospital stay improved from about average of 6.5 days to about 5 days. The next objective of the study was also to look at benchmarking, and that the quality assurance framework is serving the needs for the donor. So the quality assurance framework is a product or a service or a system that meets the needs of the customer or stakeholder. So we wanted to identify whether this framework that we have, quality assurance wise, helps the donor. And what we found is the overall major complication has defined as the need for additional interventions or surgery has decreased, is about very low, about 0.5% within the hospital stay.
How long were the subjects studied for?
Yes, so the donors are on lifelong follow-up, or unless they have come from overseas and they want to come back, in which case we do correspond with them.
So on average, those that you studied, how long
have
they?
At least a year follow-up and more. Yes. Okay. So the complication up to 6 months is about 1.5%. And the minor complications were about 3.4% at hospital stay and up to 8.3% within 6 months. And the overall complications have been about 10%, including the major and minor.
I think for people who are a lot more conservative, they might think, the first 6 months, low complication, but I don't know what the long-term effects are going to be, right? But so what is there a correlation between how well you do within the first 6 months and your long-term, health, situation after donating?
Majority of the complications we see is within the hospital stay and within the first 6 months. It is rare to find something beyond that time frame. Not that it won't happen, but it is rare. And generally, the donors are able to go back to their routine activities and their lifestyle once they have recovered from the operation.
What about the longevity of the person who donated? Do they live?
They should
less
have
long?
The same longevity as the average for their that population age group with their health condition. And living donors are generally healthy people, and we can't take donors who are, can take livers from somebody who has other medical issues.
Yeah, I'm sure you might be quite familiar with, I think, one of the most well-known liver donors in Singapore, the actor Pierre Peng. He donated his wife, was it 20 years ago? They just celebrated the 20th anniversary of the life-saving liver transplant that he gave. And if you look at pictures of him and her, actually, both of them look to be in the prime of their health.
Absolutely.
Right, so they could be your poster boy and girl for, But, what about success rate in general for the surgery?
Yeah, so generally we should say that there should be no risk to life as far as possible. That's ideal state for the donors. But we do quote about less than 0.5% risk to life. And the risk of complications, what we found in our studies, overall 1.5% rate, major complication rate, and about 10% risk of minor complications for donors. So, of course, it doesn't stop with donors. We need to ensure that the recipient outcomes are also good and compared to international benchmarks. And what we found that the 1, 3, and 5 year survival after living donor liver transplant was almost 90% for adults. It's 90% at 1 year and about 85% at 3 years and about 83% at 5 years. For the children, the 1, 3, and 5 year survival was about 93%, 89% at 3 years and 89% at 5 years.
And these were talking about the recipients, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So how can a person become a living donor? Because I understand that blood group compatibility seemed to be a major issue, but Singapore actually performed our first with incompatible blood groups 5 years ago.
Yes. So generally what we say, the requirements are the donor should be minimum 21 years of age and above.
Is there a maximum age?
Minimum. 21.
So no maximum. You can be 80 years old, but if you're healthy, your liver
the
is
maximum,
good.
We prefer not to take donors above 55. We have taken on a case-to-case basis 60 years of age. The oldest was 61 years old. But generally, below 55 is better. They should be healthy with no medical problems, and ideally shouldn't be smoking or drinking alcohol. Mm. The blood group should be compatible, and the weight for adult-to-adult liver transplant, they should be compatible weight also, because the liver is about 2% of the body weight.
Oh.
So if a person is very small and they want to donate to somebody who is a bigger size,
right,
then the liver may not be sufficient.
Right. But I think even in terms of living donors, I understand that Singapore has what they call a first world, you know, a condition in terms of their livers. A lot of us have fatty liver.
So we do a stringent assessment. The body mass index, BMI, which is acceptable, is about 30. More than that, generally, we shy away from. All donors are evaluated with standard protocol, including a detailed clinical history, physical examination, lab tests, and all that. And if there is fatty liver on the scan, and everything, all other parameters being good, we put them on a diet, a supervised weight reduction program that involves the exercise and dietary changes. And with that, there have been some donors who have successfully donated with fatty liver improving.
Right, right. Okay, I want to put you out of business. So could you tell us, you know, how we can maintain a healthy liver, you know, so that we can potentially, if we ever need to become a donor, and God forbid that we never become, you know, a candidate for to be a recipient.
Yeah, generally any good lifestyle advice for the heart pertains to the liver also. Avoiding too much of carbs. Actually, carbs, high carb in the diet gets converted to fat in the liver and then gets deposited. So a healthy, balanced diet, regular exercises, no drinking excessively, avoid smoking. And if there are health checks for, conditions like hypercholesterolemia, diabetes, high blood pressure, and if there is anything detected, of course, go for treatment for it.
Okay.
So, and of course, vaccinations.
Vaccination.
Again, universal.
And also regular health screening, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Well, Prof, thank you so much for your time and information.
Thank you.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Associate Professor Sridhar Iyer, Surgical Director and Senior Consultant for the Adult Liver Transplantation Program at the National University Centre for Organ Transplantation. I'm Melissa Hyatt for the Workday Afternoon, and you are with Money FM 89.3.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.